It's Ian Pickus, and we are back in the Congressional Corner today with David Hawkins, senior editor of The American Leader, who formerly worked at The Fulcrum and CQ and Roll Call. So, David, there was supposed to be this new government efficiency body headed by a billionaire Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, who we now understand is going to leave DOGE and run for governor of Ohio. But the federal government is a giant, sort of unwieldy thing. What do you expect DOGE will actually accomplish?
I think, you know, Elon Musk wants to go big and go bold. That's what he likes to do. So I think they'll propose some big and bold things. He talks about reducing the size of the federal budget from $6 trillion to $4 trillion, a cut of $2 trillion. That is a one wants to say mathematical impossibility without essentially closing almost all domestic offices, shrinking the military, and cutting, making cuts in social safety net programs like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. But he may propose them anyway. As we talked the last time we talked, there will be a cadre of super conservative Republicans who will want to embrace that sort of dramatic cut. But in the main, most Republicans, including the ones in this listening area, that, at least as I understand their voting record, maybe not Claudia Tenney, maybe she'd be inclined to go for this kind of thing. But in general, most Republicans don't want to cut things that deeply. Maybe they want to cut Medicaid because their constituencies, the people who their base, aren't normally Medicaid beneficiaries, Medicaid being the state and local shared, state and federal shared program for poorer people. But they do have plenty of constituents that like their Medicare, older constituents, and Social Security. So, and they do like their Defense Department, and they do, believe it or not, most of them actually like domestic federal programs that deliver money to their districts, whether it's, you know, new water systems, you know, outside of Rochester, or research into the kind of technologies that, you know, are supposed to help prop up the upstate New York economy. Most members of Congress like the federal budget more or less the way it is.
You know, don't you think Republicans learned something from the battles over the ACA? I mean, they ran every cycle for a long time on getting rid of Obamacare, but that's a tough sell at this point. I mean, it's a benefit that Americans have gotten very used to.
That's true, and that's right. They've given up, right? People don't want to give up things, even things that seem unpopular at the start. And Barack Obama himself was right about this. I mean, he was very sort of sanguine. After Obamacare was enacted and the attacks began, he said, you know, we just got to wait and it'll take hold and it'll become part of the fabric of the government and people will like it. And that's what's happened. Right. So, have Republicans learned? Yes, I think most Republicans have. You know, the challenge for Donald Trump, who of course isn't ever going to run for president again, is to persuade, if he really wants to do something like this, he's got to persuade an awful lot of Republicans, and almost all of them, that these kind of deep cuts are something that is in their best interest. And I just don't think it is. It is not in their best interest politically. I think that's a safe statement. Deep cuts like this are not in the best interests of even Republican members, most of them.
So how do you expect states to react to some of the Trump agenda? I mean, early on, we've seen on immigration, some coalitions have formed to stop threats to, like, birthright citizenship via executive order. I don't know how you feel about it, but it does seem to me that we're in a different space now than we were during the first Trump term when there was really kind of an organized resistance effort. And I don't know how you see it.
Well, I do. I think I share your sentiment, which is that the passionate resistance of 8 years ago has faded. It has certainly faded among Americans, among the constituencies. I mean, there was no women's, there was no huge, gigantic march of whatever that was. Was it more than a million people marching around the country after the first Trump inaugural, a so-called Women's March, which was not only in Washington, but echoed in cities across the country? That kind of passionate resistance does not exist at the moment. And therefore, because Democratic governors and Democratic so-called blue states, people who run in these blue states, aren't being poked by their base to resist quite as emphatically as they were even 8 years ago. I think it's a concern. I mean, this has sort of been a theme of the last couple of days we've been talking, which is the Democrats do not fight fire with fire. They do not. They're not as much sort of, you know, they tend to bring, to use a cliche, they tend to bring the butter knife to the gunfight more often than not. So how hard they'll be able to, they'll be willing to push back at both the state and federal level, I think is a cause for sort of pessimism.
So I know it's just behind us, but, you know, the midterm elections are really always on the horizon, and a lot of what Congress does has to be seen through that lens. Who do you see as emerging as the sort of Democratic voice for this time when their party is in the void the way it is?
It's a great question. I think there are a lot of Democrats that are sort of holding their fire for now. I don't think the race for the 2028 Democratic nomination won't really get going until after the midterm of 2026. But there will be plenty of Democrats who will be out there starting to test the waters. In the meantime, who's going to be the day-to-day spokesman? I guess you'd have to turn first to the two prides of Brooklyn. You know, Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries have the platform. They have the responsibility, and both of them, in different ways, are quite good messengers for their party. So I think you'd have to start with those two. You know, Schumer has been pretty adept at repositioning, at sort of framing the Democratic point of view in ways that you know, the liberal, that are not just to be catnip for the liberal elite, but in ways that, you know, working people, everyday Americans, as Hakeem Jeffries calls them, can understand. I would say both of them are pretty good at that, so I would look to them.
And lastly, we haven't talked about the new vice president, J.D. Vance. What kind of portfolio do you expect him to have in this new administration?
A little bit of a mystery. You know, I think one little nugget from inauguration day, there was one time during inauguration weekend. Oh, I think it was during the rally the day before the election, the YMCA rally where Trump danced to YMCA, where J.D. Vance was supposed to have a speaking role, and Donald Trump called on Elon Musk instead. So I'm not exactly, I don't think J.D. Vance has been given a particular policy portfolio yet. And so I don't know whether we will return. I mean, we've had a run of powerful vice presidents. I mean, we're still in the period of official mourning for the death of Jimmy Carter. One of the most important things that Jimmy Carter did as president, in my view, was elevate and intensify the role of the vice president. Up until Walter Mondale, we really had some pretty underutilized and underinformed vice presidents. Jimmy Carter changed that with Walter Mondale. It has mostly been the case ever since that vice presidents have had some real responsibilities and some real authority, and have been, as Joe Biden famously insisted upon when he was Obama's vice president, they were the last person in the room. I think it's an open question whether that kind of thing will be J.D. Vance's future.
Well, we will definitely be hearing from you, David Hawkins, senior editor of The American Leader. He formerly worked at The Fulcrum and CQ and Roll Call. Thanks, as always, for being with us on the Congressional Corner. Happy birthday, and we'll see you soon for the next one.
Thanks, Ian.